Welcome to this episode of Just the Discs. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. It's new arrivals time. It's September. I've got my buddy Rob G joining me. Hello, Rob.
Hello.
So,
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, sir. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
Very frantic. A lot of traveling going on. But I have a stack of movies here that I'm very excited to talk to you about.
Yeah. And I told you via text that I'm fascinated because they've been coming fast and furious to your residence.
Letterboxed. Yeah.
Letterboxed and just, you know, general social media posts where I'm like, oh, he's got that and that. And any one of these could be.
You have
the thing.
No idea so what's coming. I love it.
I really don't. I have a couple guesses.
Yeah.
But that's really it. There's a lot of stuff. And I also have a nice little stack myself. And I'm doing something a little different in that I'm throwing in a couple new labels that I've only mentioned. Maybe one of them on a previous episode, and the other one, I don't know if I've mentioned them yet. So we'll get to that when we get to that. They're actually
intriguing.
At the bottom of my stack. So
intriguing.
So it's September. It is my birthday month. Last month was yours.
Yeah.
And so my stack is a little silly.
Is it all birthday picks?
It's not exactly birthday picks, but there's definitely some personal fun
favorites?
Time movies. Yeah, well, kind of. I mean, definitely movies that I like that are not necessarily art films. Let's put it like that.
Do you have a birthday movie? Do you have a movie that you watch every year on your birthday?
I don't, you know? Yeah. And I remember Elric talking about that being a big deal when he was a kid. Do you have a birthday movie?
I don't think so. I mean, the last couple of years, it's been Teen Wolf, the original, just because.
Well, that's a great
choice. It always makes me feel happy, so.
Yeah.
But no, not really.
Yeah, no, I should get in that tradition, but it's just like, you know, as we've gotten older, you never know what's going to be happening on your birthday. I know some people that like actually, you know, take their birthday off of work or whatever, and so they can have that time. But for me, I don't know. I'm not a big birthday person, really.
I just assume you watch King of Comedy on every holiday or break or, you know, celebratory day.
That would be a little
based
rough.
On your name on your Twitter handle.
That'd be a rough one. But, you know, it's funny because that movie has gotten easier for me to watch despite its awkwardness as I've watched it more and more. But it's definitely not a feel-good movie per se, so I don't watch it as much as I used to. I'd rather watch After Hours.
Yeah.
That'd be more my jam.
Yeah.
Anyway, sir, let's get into this stack business we've got here. What do you got in front of you? What's on the top of that stack?
All right, top of the stack, and I teased this last episode. I got to go with Arrow's brand new release of the John Hughes classic Weird Science.
Nice.
You know, it's not a bad idea.
What?
Making a girl. Actually making a girl.
This is Wyatt and Gary.
I give her Womdigious mammary glands.
Something's about to change their world. Something out of this world.
She's alive! Alive!
What would you little maniacs like to do first?
It's all in the name of science. Weird science.
If you want to be a party animal, you have to learn to live in the jungle.
Not us.
Not here.
No way.
She is turning their lives.
Trust me for once, will you?
What is going on?
Gary, I don't know you.
I don't know
you.
Their minds. And their house. Upside down.
It's seriously affecting your sex life.
It's completely unnatural.
Do you realize it's snowing in my room?
Totally unbelievable.
What's going on?
And definitely weird.
Hey, dudes.
They went from zeros to heroes in one fantastic weekend.
That's so good.
Universal Pictures presents a John Hughes film, Weird Science.
It's purely sexual.
Yeah, I mean, look, I love this movie. It's my favorite John Hughes movie.
Ooh,
I know that
favorite.
I know that might be weird to some people. Look, I love them all. I love The Breakfast Club. I love Uncle Buck and just like all of them. Ferris Bueller, of course. But this one, this is my horror movie. I mean, it's basically John Hughes' version of Frankenstein. And I mean, it even has clips from Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. So this is that version of it just funneled through kind of John Hughes in his prime. And I've always said that this would be a perfect triple feature with like, God, what were the three movies I was thinking of? It was all takes on Frankenstein. Oh, Reanimator, Frankenhooker and Weird Science. I think that would be the ultimate triple bill if I've ever seen one before. Somebody out there, go program that. But anyway.
That sounds fantastic.
So this is Arrow's release. It is both for Region A and B. It's a US-UK release. I never noticed that apparently the older John Hughes movies that came out through Universal were fairly not good HD transfers. I never really noticed it until these came out, until I got the Criterion Breakfast Club, which I talked about last month, and this one. So I popped it in. It's a brand new scan from a 4K scan from the original negative. Looks better than it's ever looked before. There's also a seamlessly branched extended version, which is a few minutes longer. And it's got a couple of new scenes in high def, which initially I was like, oh man, I wonder if it's the TV stuff and stuff, but it's not. There is the edited for TV version here as a bonus feature as well. That's in SD. But really, even on top of all of that, this is just a great disc. There's so many good, there's some of the older special features. There's like an archival documentary called It's Alive from, I think, the previous DVD and Blu-ray release. That's all carted over. You know, the trailers, TV spots, etc. But the really cool stuff is all the newer stuff. So there's an interview. There's Casting Weird Science, which is an interview with Jackie Birch. And I've always been fascinated with this Jackie Birch because it's probably the most famous casting director name that I've ever heard. Like, it comes up in this era of the 80s all the time. Like, I remember when I talked to Tom Holland quite a bit about Fright Night, it's like, oh, Jackie Birch was the one that cast Fright Night. Basically, any interview of any of these 80 horror cult comedies, you'll hear them mention this person. And I didn't even know what he looked like. So it was just kind of fun to finally get a little interview with the casting director and kind of hear about that aspect of filmmaking, because it really is really important and really pivotal. And so they talk a bit about the casting. There was, I wish I could remember who it was, but now I'm drawing a blank, but they did actually cast somebody else as Lisa. And maybe even filmed with her for a day or two, before they had to let her go and bring in Kelly LeBrock. So that stuff to me is always really fascinating. There's a new interview with, John Capellos, who is Dino the Greek. In this movie, he's the guy, one of the guys at the jazz bar where our two leads get kind of, totally, wasted. And he's also the janitor in Breakfast Club. He's kind of a John Hughes regular. It's a good interview with him talking about, working with John. And, my personal favorite, which you wouldn't think is, exciting, but there's a feature called Chet Happens, and it's a new interview with special makeup creator Craig Reardon. And this was the best surprise of the whole thing. And I actually tweeted a bunch of photos from this because you never realize how many effects are in a movie until you talk to the effects guy. And really, so Chet becomes kind of like a giant, they basically turn him into a giant pile of shit. I mean, let's be honest. And so you get to see all these multiple designs of Chet before they get to the one that they decided on. And so it's really funny because he's basically like a Jabba the Hutt looking thing. But more interesting is there's photos, and they shot this of Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Russler. They get turned into, I think it's a donkey and a baboon. And there's fun photos of Anthony Michael Hall with them in full makeup, as those animals. And I was like, whoa, that's like, I would have loved to have seen that. So I don't even know if there's footage of it, like actual video footage, but that was a big surprise to me. And so that's the thing. It's like, I love, these are movies that you and I have seen a million times growing up. And then you get a Blu-ray disc that, you see these interviews with people that you might think like, oh, I don't know, is that going to be interesting or what? And then they reveal what I consider the gold, which is little things like that, like cool character pieces and effects and things that you couldn't even imagine were ever in the movie. So, this disc is just top notch. It's the interview with the composer. I think they carted over is there a commentary on here? Let me double check before I say that. Yeah, and there's a PDF of the original shooting script if you put it in your computer. It's just really great. You know, I mean, it's weird science. It's exciting that John Hughes is getting his due now. I mean, first Breakfast Club with Criterion, and I thought that was a stellar disc. Now this, and I believe they did 16 Candles, but it's a UK only release. So I've got to pick that one up as well. But Weird Science from Arrow, top notch, must own if you're an 80s fan.
Excellent. Yeah. In fact, I do own it. I picked it up when it came out. I had to do it. I'm with you. I don't know if it's my favorite over Breakfast Club, but it's definitely one that I love and have loved for a long time. And I'm so, I hadn't even, like you, I hadn't thought about the transfer thing because you assume it's a, you know, classic that the studio would have taken care of it, but you know, that's not necessarily the case. And in fact, that kind of ties into my first title in that sometimes it seems I'm hearing that certain films, if they're extremely popular, that sometimes the elements aren't in such good shape. And I'm not saying that's the case with Weird Science necessarily, but I'm glad it got a cleanup and it looks better with that new blue. So
yeah, no, it's excellent.
All right, so I know you're a fan of this first one that I'm going to talk about. This is from Warner Archive. It is The Thin Man from 1934.
Oh. I gotta talk to you. I want you to tell me something. I want you to give it to me straight. Get me?
Hey, would you mind putting that gun away? My wife doesn't care, but I'm a very timid fellow.
You idiot. Ask to ask her.
All right, shoot. I mean, what's on your mind?
You don't have to tell me you're tough. I heard about you. I'm Joe Morelli.
Well, I never heard about you.
I didn't knock Julia off.
All right, you didn't.
I ain't seen her in about 3 months. We was all washed up.
Well, why tell me?
I wouldn't have any reason to hide her. She was always on the up and up with me, but that dirty little Nunheim, he got sore with her because I clicked and he didn't. And he put the finger on me.
Well, this is all swell, brother, but you're peddling your fish in the wrong market. I've got nothing to do with this.
Now listen, Studsy Burke says you used to be okay. That's why I'm here. Did
Say,
they
how
think
is that... Studsy? I didn't know he was out of stir.
Oh, he's all right. He'd like to see you. But listen, what's the law doing to me? Did they think I did it, or is it just something else to pin on me?
If I knew, I'd tell you. I don't know anything about it. Ask the police.
That'd be very smart. That'd be about the smartest thing I ever did meet. The police captain's been in the hospital 3 weeks on account of we had an argument. The boys would like to have me come in and ask questions. They'd like it right down to the end of their blackjacks. Now, I comes to you on a level. Studsy says you're on the level. Why don't you be on the level?
I am on the level. If I knew anything, I'd be...
What's that?
I don't know. That makes this your party.
Open up, police!
Why, you two-timing?
And you and I were talking about this online a little bit, like... I hope you're right. I hope that you theorized that maybe, you know, maybe Warner Archive will do a box set because obviously there's a bunch of these movies. I said no, but only because I don't normally know them to do box sets. But then you pointed out the recent Shaft box set. And I'm like, well, fair point. Fair point. The only thing I think I would say about that is that Shaft itself was released by, I think, Warner Home Entertainment. And then the other two, Shaft's Big Score and Shaft in Africa, were released by Warner Archive. So now we've got
I thought there was an archive release of all three, but I could be mistaken.
I think you're right. I think the box is all three Warner Archive, but originally I had bought the Shaft disc and that was just straight Warner Home Video. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means that they're sharing stuff more or not, but I would love to see all the films get Blu-rays. I just have a feeling that the way that they do things, they tend to, and it maybe it's, my guess is it's economical. Like, they want to get the discs out as soon as possible once they've done all their work and spent the money, as opposed to, like, you know, trying to do a ton of work on like 5 or 6 titles and then front loading the costs of that and then waiting and putting a box set out. I think they're, I mean, I don't know exactly, but I think they're more in a position to financially not be able to afford to do that, but that's a total guess. I don't really know anything.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think the HD transfers exist. If I'm not mistaken, I think I looked on Amazon, and you can rent all the movies individually. So, I mean,
that's
look,
cool.
I'm just happy they're coming, or at least this first one finally came out. So that's a good sign that hopefully we'll get the rest. But
yeah, I think you're right.
Tell me about it. Am I getting this? Am I picking this up or what?
Yeah, I think you should. I really think you should. I mean, you know, it's... I mean, I got the impression it wasn't going to be as good as some of their other transfers, but I think it looks great, and I couldn't be happier to have it. I mean, unfortunately, there's no, you know, say if Criterion had gotten this, you know, it would have been pretty great because, you know, they'd have added some extras. As it is, the extras are only 1936 Lux Radio Theater broadcast with Powell and Myrna Loy, which is cool. And then a 1957 episode of the Thin Man TV series called Scene of the Crime. So there's no commentary. There's no, I mean, there's a whole documentary, Nick and Nora, that came with the box set, the DVD box set. So I'm assuming that if these continue to come out, or if they do indeed do a box set, which would be great, and I really hope they do, that documentary would be included, because that's a really wonderful, you don't really need much more than that. I mean, a commentary on each one would be wonderful, but that documentary was pretty great, if I recall. But anyway, I'm a huge fan of this movie. It's, you know, shot by James Wong Howe. It is based on material by Dashiell Hammett, and it of course has William Powell and Myrna Loy as one of the most awesome couples in all of cinema, as far as I'm concerned. And you know, he is an ex-detective who marries kind of an heiress. You know, Myrna Loy's character is from the upper echelon. She's from a rich family, and so he's marries her and basically retires from being a detective, and they just kind of drink. That's really kind of what they do now, is they go to you know, upper class parties and drink. And there's a great introduction shot, tracking shot of William Powell at the beginning of the movie, like weaving through a crowd. I think he has two martinis with him, probably, you know. But they're just adorable together. Like, I absolutely love Myrna Loy. I think she's just one of my favorites in terms of how much I'm drawn to her, and how just how wonderful and gorgeous, and she's like one of those cinematic ideal kind of women, you know. She's just so great, and such a great, like, the first time she shows up and meets him, he's in a bar, he's drunk, and she's like,
pretty girl.
Yeah, she's a very nice type.
You got types?
Only you, darling. Lanky brunettes with wicked jaws. Leo, compliments this season.
Who is she?
Oh, darling, I was hoping I wouldn't have to answer that.
Come on.
Well, Dorothy is really my daughter. You see, it was spring in Venice. When I was so young, I didn't know what I was doing. We're all like that on my father's side.
By the way, how is your father's side?
Oh, it's much better, thanks. And yours?
Say, how many drinks have you had?
This will make 6 martinis.
All right. Will you bring me 5 more martinis? Leo, line them right up here.
Yes, ma'am.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's great. Yeah.
No, their chemistry is just pure magic. It really
is. Yeah. It's one for the ages. Like, one of those couples that is cinema for me. Like, you know, just so great. But I mean, the basic plot is that a friend of theirs, dad, goes missing. That is the titular Thin Man, I think. Is that, that's the funny thing about the stories too, is that you'd think William Powell's the Thin Man, but actually it's the name of the guy, yeah, in the first case. And but anyway, so then he comes out of retirement and tries to figure out where this guy has gone. And you know, it's just a really great, like, companion piece to, like, the Maltese Falcon, but like a much lighter, breezier version. I mean, it's just got so many great scenes with the two of them. One of my favorite scenes in the movie completely stops down at one point where William Powell is, like, hung over on the couch after, like, a bender that they, a big party they've had. And he's just sitting there in the morning shooting at balloons near the Christmas tree with a BB gun. He's just, like, on the couch shooting these balloons. And it's just this great moment. I'm just like, I love that the movie stopped for this, you know. But anyway, and also there's just a great scene, I won't say when, where the two of them, Loy and Powell, are, like, walking out of a room, and they spontaneously break into, like, skipping. So they just skip out of a room, and it's the really one of the most adorable things I've ever seen in any movie. It's so great. Anyway, we both love this. It's a really great detective story. It's very funny, and just one of those things that shows you how wonderful on-screen chemistry can be. So anyway, highly recommended. The Thin Man, now out from Warner Archive.
Beautiful.
That's my number one.
Alrighty. This next one came as a complete shock to me because I'd heard a lot about it. I didn't doubt that it was good, but I was basically on one of my Atomic Records runs and skimming through used stuff, and I found it for like $5. I'm talking about Tom Cruise, the man Tom Cruise, as Jack Reacher.
There's this guy. Kind of cop. At least he used to be. He doesn't care about proof. He doesn't care about the law. He only cares about what's right. He knows what I did. You can't protect me. No one can.
You think I'm a hero? I am not a hero. If you're smart, that scares you. Because I have nothing to lose. Remember, you wanted this.
Oh, nice.
I don't know why. I don't know. I just, it's like, Tom Cruise. I mean, I love the Mission Impossible movies. He is still one of those big movie stars. 99% of the time, all his movies work, except The Mummy, which is a whole different story. But I don't know what I thought. I just thought this was going to be like another Mission Impossible or Mission Impossible Light. And it's not. It's awesome. It's not quite John Wick, but it's almost like his version of John Wick. I mean, Keanu can do really no wrong. But it's based on a series of novels by a guy named Lee Child. And this one in particular, I believe, is a book called One Shot. And so there's a whole bunch of these Jack Reacher books. It's kind of funny. I read up a little bit on it. Apparently, Jack Reacher is supposed to be like, I guess my imagination would be like what, like the size of The Rock. Like he's supposed to be like a giant monster of a man. but instead in the movie, it's Tom Cruise. Still believable. But basically he is a, he's got some sort of former military experience, if I'm not mistaken. And this is written in, it was adapted and directed by Christopher McQuarrie, who did do the last couple of Mission Impossible movies. And I got to tell you, this guy he wrote The Usual Suspects. He's a really sharp writer. And
he's incredible. He's just incredible.
The opening sequence of this movie is just terrific. It grabs you right away. And it's basically, you see a sniper setting up to shoot a target. And basically the entire opening is you are in the POV of his viewfinder following four or five different targets. And then, you know, and you're assuming you, the audience, like, all right, he hasn't found his one yet. And then it's pretty horrific. He basically unloads and takes like all five people out that he just targeted. And it's just incredible way of putting you right in the middle of it and feeling like you're kind of a part of it, like this voyeuristic kind of opening. And then from there, this other former military guy that's got a little bit of history for violence kind of gets blamed for the crime, although we know it's not him. And the only words he says before he pretty much like passes out and slips into a coma is like, Jack Reacher, get Jack Reacher. And that's where the movie actually becomes comical, is because basically they're like, who is this guy? He's like a ghost and apparently nobody stop him. And then like in comes Tom Cruise, like right into the room, like, hi, I'm Jack Reacher. You know, like they're like, how are we going to find him? And he just like shows up. So it's funny. It's action packed. It's actually a really wonderful thriller trying to figure out exactly what's going on. And to top it all off, the villain is Werner Herzog. So, and he's wonderful. He doesn't show up until like an hour into the movie. He's just kind of behind the scenes. And then as soon as he shows up, you're like, well, of course it's Werner. You know, who else is going to be the villain of this movie? So anyway, this was a really pleasant surprise. Just a great modern action movie. And there's, again, like I said, there's a whole bunch of books. There is a sequel, which I immediately bought right after because I'm like, man, I want another Jack Reacher movie. The sequel is really good. I don't think it's as strong as this first movie.
Yeah, I'd agree.
This first movie is rock solid from start to finish. Second one's pretty darn good, but this one's great. So if you like Tom Cruise, if you like the Mission Impossible movies, and you like John Wick and what Keanu's doing there, I'd definitely give this a shot, especially if you could find it fairly cheap, which I think you can. And there's a bunch of cool features on here, just some short behind the scenes making of stuff, a little bit of talking about the books, and a commentary from Tom Cruise and Christopher McQuarrie. So Jack Reacher, terrific pick.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Yeah, I'm a fan of this one too, for sure. And I know you were saying something about hit the character actually being much larger in the books, and I really love that he's Tom Cruise size, because it allows for some great scenes in the movie where people underestimate him.
Yeah,
you know, and I just love when you're in a scene with somebody and they think they know what's up, and you're just like, oh, you about to be fucked up. Sorry.
Yeah, there's actually a scene where like a bunch of frat guys at a bar, like,
yes,
like,
that's the one,
ask him to step outside, and it's whatever, it's like five dudes, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna give you a chance to walk away. Like, he keeps warning, like, you the audience awesome. Knows like he's gonna fuck them up if they don't walk away. Yep. Yeah, so it's almost like that kind of slightly egotistical kind of egging on that he does that makes him it just makes him a funny character.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I love that stuff.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll say about it is, like you were mentioning, Christopher McQuarrie, who is amazing, and I think the Mission Impossible movies are, you know, as Hollywood entertainments, I think they're pretty top-notch in terms of the way that they're constructed. And, I mean, they are not without their holes or whatever, but I really think he's just, like, some kind of genius when it comes to story and construction of film and tension, and I think he's only getting better. But that said, I would just take this opportunity to recommend that people go back and look at Way of the Gun,
yeah,
which is his movie from, I want to say, about 2000. Definitely has its un-PC moments, but has got some really great modern action, self-aware sort of action film stuff. And both Ryan Phillippe and Benicio Del Toro are great in it. So just another side recommend.
And did you know that, by the way, I think Christopher McQuarrie tweeted this and it breaks my heart. So Henry Cavill was in the last Mission Impossible movie, which they did together. And yeah. I think somebody just asked Christopher McQuarrie if he'd ever been asked to do like a superhero movie. And he's like, yes, me and Henry pitched them a Man of Steel sequel, and Warner Brothers turned us down. And I'm like, how do you wow. not let that guy make a Superman movie? Like, that seriously, my heart.
Especially considering the stuff they've already put out.
Yeah, you know? It's like, this guy could have done it.
Really? Like, I mean, and I'm not bagging on Man of Steel or Batman v Superman.
I will.
No, and that's fine. And stuff, but I'm just like, really, like, give him a shot. I mean, it's going to be a good movie, you know? It's going to be... Anyway, that doesn't surprise me somehow. That's too bad. That's unfortunate. All right, so I got one from Kino Lorber next on my stack. This is one I've been looking forward to having on Blu-ray for a long time. It is Mumford from 1999.
I'm not making any promises.
Turn back anytime you want.
Oh, boy, this should be interesting. Hello, Mother. I want you to meet Dr. Mumford.
Mumford? Like the town?
Yes. It's a pleasure meeting you, Mrs. Crisp.
What's happening here?
We're going for a walk.
Do you think that's a good idea?
Dr. Mumford does, yes. I've put myself completely in his hands. For today, anyway.
What kind of doctor are you?
PhD, psychologist.
Oh, not a real doctor.
That's right, the fake kind.
We better go, or I'm liable to bail on this whole thing.
Nice meeting you.
Mom's such a cutie.
Usually people don't hate me till they get to know me.
You caught her in a good mood.
Wow.
Doesn't bother me anymore. It's my dad and my brother I worry about.
Maybe, but you're the one whose ass is dragging.
Is that the technical description of what I've got?
Is she against you getting help?
We don't discuss it.
Something's bothering her.
Oh, we've all disappointed her. Me especially, but my dad, of course. She thinks my brother's all right, but she didn't expect much. It's what happens when you marry beneath yourself.
Please forgive me.
What?
Negative thinking makes everything more difficult. If you're going to have enough strength to do this, we have to talk only about positive things, all right?
All right.
Okay, then. Are you positive your mother's a bitch? Just kidding.
So this one is special to me because, well, it was written and directed by Lawrence Kasdan, who obviously, you know, has done a ton of movies and, you know, big screenwriter, you know, worked on Raiders of the Lost Ark and Empire Strikes Back and things like that. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of like a smaller movie that he did. And the reason it's significant to me is because 1999 is the year that I moved to Los Angeles. And I remember this was one of the first movies that I saw in L.A. And I think it was at the... Damn it. I'm not going to remember the theater. I think we were going to the... whatever the one is by the mall by Nakatomi. I can't think of what that mall is called now. But yeah, I think that's where I saw it. And I really liked it. And it was one where I was like, I like that. And I'm just sort of waiting to see what else came out in 99 to see if it would be on my top 10 list. And I think it did make the list. But it's only gotten better for me as I've gone along and come further away from it. The basic story is that of this small town called Mumford, which suddenly, surprisingly, has a new therapist played by Lauren Dean, who is a guy that I am kind of shocked didn't have as much of a career after this movie. I mean, not that this movie should be a breakout. I mean, it is a breakout, but I know it's not like the kind of movie that's like a big action movie that gets people attention and stuff, but he's really good in it. And he plays this guy who calls himself Mumford. He opens a, you know, practice to have people come in and talk to him. He says he's a psychologist, but he has a backstory. And we don't get that backstory until about halfway through the movie. And it is a very interesting backstory in terms of where he came from and what put him on the path to be doing what he's doing. But the whole time we're also getting to know all the people in this small town. The cast is like ridiculous. So you've got like Hope Davis, Jason Lee, Alfre Woodard, Zooey Deschanel, Mary McDonald, Pruitt-Taylor Vince, Martin Short, David Paymer, Jane Addams, Ted Danson, Elizabeth Moss is in this movie.
Wow.
Robert Stack is in this movie. It's insane, this cast. So it really is like this small town and them sort of airing their problems and him having sort of an unconventional approach to therapy. Like, you get a sense that there's something off because he seems to push the boundaries and do things that are maybe borderline unethical in terms of the treatments that he proposes and the things that he says to his patients, but it seems to be working. So there's this sense of like, the town, you know, generally liking having him there, but also being worried about, and there's two other rival therapists in the town that want to find out his backstory. And so it becomes a thing of them trying to figure it out. And, but there is a sort of a little bit of a Frank Capra thing happening, but on a like subdued level. And I don't know, it's just a lot of fun characters. This town just has a lot of interesting people with a lot of interesting problems. And Lauren Dean's approach is really neat. And overall, it's just a very enjoyable ensemble piece that I've been a fan of for a long time. But yeah, it's great. It's never been on Blu-ray, and it finally got this disc from Kino Lorber. It's got a new interview. I'm not sure if it's new or not, but it's got an interview with Lawrence Kasdan. There's a making of featurette. No commentary, unfortunately, which I would love to get from Kasdan, but the interview and the making of are nice, and they give a little something in terms of like what he was thinking when he made the movie. And I don't know, I think it's the last great movie that he made. I could be wrong. I could be forgetting things. Oh, no, it's not the last. No, it is, because I was thinking Zero Effect for a second, but that's Jake Kasdan, and it's the year before, so it's not anything. But anyway, Mumford, good stuff from Kino Lorber. That's my next one.
Wow. All right, I'm going to throw a curveball at you.
Curveball.
Curveball coming at you. My next Blu-ray pick is Soundgarden, Live from the Artist Den.
This is what you told me about. Okay.
Music pick. There you go.
Okay.
Listen, I love Soundgarden. I love the whole 90s grunge era. Nirvana was, of course, my favorite. There have been some great Nirvana releases on Blu-ray and DVD. This is actually a live show from the Wiltern here in Los Angeles that was professionally shot. And I think it's from about, I want to say, maybe 2013. And they are, like, at the top of their game here. I kind of saw them on this tour. I'd seen them way back in the 90s when Super Unknown came out, and was kind of disappointed because they were kind of already starting to get the stress and strain of kind of success, and maybe they were a little sloppier on stage than they should have been. And so They weren't good when I saw them in the 90s. I'll put it to you that way. But then they got back together, and I just moved to town. My friend Mark bought tickets for us to go see them at the Los Angeles Coliseum. And there is a moment during the song Outshine where it's like filling this stadium, and I'm in the middle of this entire crowd, and it's so freaking loud and sounds so awesome, and his voice was always incredible, Chris Cornell, RIP, that I immediately thought, like, wow, this is what it must have been like to see Black Sabbath. Like, they are that good. I totally get why they're playing a giant stadium right now. And so I've always loved them, and I caught a little bit of this on YouTube, and it is just an incredible show. It's sometimes you capture the perfect pivotal moment of a band. This is it. It's 29 tracks long, so it's a lot of music from their entire career. Some of the bonus features include interviews with the whole band, which is pretty fun, but it's like I never understood. You know, I obviously do a lot of interviews in the movie realm, but music interview people are really terrible at asking questions about music. I've always noticed that. Like, basically the interview here is like, so what is it like to play a venue like this that's this small? How do you feel about it compared to bigger venues? And I'm like, really? You have them for 10 minutes and you're going to ask them about the venue size? Like, who cares about that? But still, it's nice to see them all. And again, I'm so shocked and saddened that Chris Cornell is no longer with us. Such a terrible, terrible loss. But I mean, if you're ever curious about this band, I actually have pulled a clip for you, ooh, Brian and audience.
Nice.
I want to play a little snippet from that Outshined clip, so you could just hear how freaking amazing his voice was live.
Pretty cool, man.
So that is my pick. Soundgarden Live from the Artist Den, now on Blu-ray, and it is also available audio-wise digitally on iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, and there's a CD of it and a vinyl release too, so you can get every possible iteration of this live show.
Lovely. No, that's very cool. I like curveballs. That's a good one. I have something I just got and am very excited about. We have talked about it on Pure Cinema. I'm pretty sure you're a fan of it too. It goes back to our Revenge episode on Pure Cinema, if I recall. And it is The New Kids from 1985.
Hi.
What am I filling up, please?
Regular?
Yes, please. You know there's a dance Saturday.
Yeah, so I heard.
You going?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
I'm going. Go with me.
Why?
Well, because I'm asking you.
So?
I'm asking you. You will have a good time. You'll go, right?
Look, I don't know. We haven't really met. I'm sorry. Oh, you owe me $4.
Give me bullshit about $4. I'm talking about a dance here.
Look, I have a lot of work to do, so could you just give me the money? That's $100. I can't change that.
Listen, I'm asking you nicely. Are you gonna go with me?
I don't think so. Thanks, here's your change.
I'm due, Trip. You know what that means? You know, I come in here and act decent and you turn me down. Well, I don't fucking believe that.
You're crazy.
Crazy? You want crazy? Well, I'll show you crazy.
So this one features the director of Friday the 13th, Mr. Sean Cunningham.
Oh yeah.
In what I think is his best directed film. I think Friday the 13th is fine in terms of the direction, but it's not. That's not why you're there. I don't think. I think he,
including the boiling of the pot in real time.
Okay, well that's maybe not that. Maybe that that's fair. That does that. That I don't know if that works as the tension builder or whatever the fuck. But I don't know. I just think that this between the performances that he gets and the way that this movie builds to a climax, I find it as satisfying as Friday the 13th to watch. Personally, not as satisfying as Friday 13th 2, which is my favorite, and obviously that is not him, that is, you know, Steve Miner and everything, but anyway, I just think this is a really neat movie, and basically the story is that Lori Loughlin and Shannon Presby play brother and sister whose parents are killed in a car crash. One of their parents is played by Tom Atkins, and they have a great opening scene where he's like sort of a military guy. He gets them out of bed, he takes them running, and they have like a great, you know, father, daughter, son bonding moment, and then he's dead. And then they get basically sent off to Florida where they live with an uncle and his wife, and they run this sort of rundown carnival there. And so that's a really interesting backdrop, I've always thought. And then, of course, they go to high school and they get themselves in trouble with the local, you know, redneck gang led by an amazing James Spader, who is like maybe his most evil I've ever seen him. And he's played some pretty sinister dudes. But it's just a great movie in terms of the way that it keeps one-upping itself. You know, like, you know, the kids get involved with the rednecks, and then the rednecks fuck with them, and they fuck back, and the rednecks fuck back, and it just keeps going and escalating until it gets to this really amazing climax at the carnival. And that is, for me, like one of my favorite scenes from a revenge movie, like, ever. Like, I just think it's fantastic. And it just, it gets violent, it gets scary, it's just very dark, and Spader is unhinged, and I love it. I'm a huge fan of it. I wish this had extras, but I'm just happy to see it on Blu-ray. It is one of the Mill Creek Entertainment slipcase Blu-rays where they have it, basically like a faux VHS cover that goes on the outside of your disc, and I think that's cute. So anyway, New Kids is a gem and definitely worth watching if you haven't seen it and you want some like crazy 80s revenge action teen movie with Spader. It's good stuff.
Very cool. Well, I was going to try to make a connection, but there is none. So I, other than, hey, this is another Arrow release and it features a very young Willem Dafoe and quite possibly his first theatrical feature. I'm Ooh. Talking about The Loveless.
Here they come, as tough as they come. The Loveless.
Which way are you coming from?
It don't matter which way I'm coming from. It's which way I'm going to.
I know I could send you to heaven. I don't want them in here, and I don't want to serve them.
Like the town?
They're animals.
They're a bunch of commies.
We're going nowhere.
Fast. If this keeps up, the gang's going to have to leave town. If there's any town left to leave.
We'll be right in the neighborhood.
The Loveless. Hope you don't live where they're going next.
Now, this is one I've been wanting to see. This is Kathryn Bigelow's directorial debut?
Yes. Technically, it is directed by Kathryn Bigelow and Monty Montgomery, who was her partner at the time. And it's kind of funny because, like, I had a group of people over to watch this. Natasha Kermani, the director of Lucky and Imitation Girl I've worked with, she's a huge Kathryn Bigelow fan, and this is one of the movies that was a blind spot to both of us. So I invited her over. It's like, hey, you know, Arrow did this great new release. And we even theorized that Monty Montgomery couldn't be a real name. We're just like, who is that? But no, he's a real dude, and he's interviewed on this disc. So we are totally wrong. And he was, in fact, Kathryn Bigelow's boyfriend at the time. So there you have it. There's that. But anyway, so Arrow did this release, and I was very confused by this movie, especially based on the kind of the cover art, the fact that it was always in like the cult section. And I thought I caught a snippet of this movie. And for some reason, I always imagined it to be kind of in the vein of like Streets of Fire or The Warriors, like something like that had kind of a weird like urban punk feel to it. And it is not that at all. This is literally, it's set in the late 50s. And it came out in 1981. It's set in the late 50s, and it's almost like it's like a day in the life of a handful of kind of greaser motorcycle guys, the leader being Willem Dafoe, Vance. And basically he's just cutting through town waiting for his friends to arrive. They're all headed kind of up to some I don't know what you'd call it. It's Daytona races. They're headed to basically race their cars. And so they kind of end up in the small town because one of their cars breaks down. And so they're stuck in this town for the day. And it's just kind of like this great, like raw, honest, you know, everyone's very nervous around them, obviously, because they're dressed in, you know, they got the slick hair and they're dressed in leather and they've got motorcycles and they kind of look a little off. But, you know, they have this natural kind of rapport amongst them. Like, you believe that these characters are bikers. And then there's all sorts of things happening in town. Like, basically, Willem Dafoe at one point kind of like runs off with this girl from town whose dad is kind of like, let's say, not a very nice character. It's got like, I don't want to say Twin Peaks because that's not very accurate, but it does feel like there's a lot more darkness in this town underneath the surface, over this kind of backdrop of just, you know, idealistic 50s kind of, you know, sheen, if you will. So really interesting movie. I thought it was really, really well done. This is a new 2K restoration from the original camera negative. As always, it looks amazing. Arrow does Criterion level work when it comes to these restorations. But I got to tell you, the best stuff on here is there's a few things. There's a brand new making of documentary called No Man's Friend Today, Making the Loveless. And it's got brand new interviews with Willem Dafoe. Willem is great in it, and he's very candid and kind of talking about how crazy it was. And I'm going to get all the names wrong. They're listed on the back here. Maren Cantor, Robert Gordon, Philip Kimbrough, and Lawrence Matarese. And I can't remember which the two guys are. I should have looked it up. But basically, they interviewed two of the bikers together, and it will warm your heart because these were legit real life, like punk rockers in New York City that rode motorcycles. Like, they weren't actors. Basically, Willem Dafoe is the only actor of the crew. And the rest are like just a bunch of like punks in the early 80s that used to hang around with Kathryn Bigelow and Monty. And they're like, oh, you guys should be in our movie. You got the right look for it. And so they hang out. But these two particular guys, obviously, they lost touch after the movie came out. And they like reunited like something like 20 some odd years later because they both went to the same tattoo parlor. And so you get to see the both of them together. And it's just like one of those great real life friendships where there's just a level of enthusiasm. Like, yeah, we did this movie when we were kids and now here we are. We're adults. People know this movie. It's so cool. There's just something really endearing about seeing some of these characters now. And that's kind of the thrill of a lot of these movies coming out now, especially on Blu-ray, is the opportunity to see characters. You're seeing these characters kind of captured in a moment in time, and then almost immediately you can cut to see them now. And there's just some kind of magic to that, in my opinion. So there's that. There's a new interview with the production designer. Rockless, an audio interview with musician Eddie Dixon. A lot of the music is a big pivotal part of this movie, but unfortunately no Kathryn Bigelow. It would have been nice if she was on a bit, but they do get Monty Montgomery. He's part of the interviews, he does a new commentary with Elijah Drenner, who is a friend of ours. He does a lot of these behind the scenes featurettes and stuff like that. So this is a really cool. This is like the proper treatment for a cool little cult classic like this. So I really love it. If you've never seen The Loveless, you're never going to get Willem Dafoe. I mean, he's a weird looking dude in everything, but this is probably him at his peak in terms of looks. If Willem Dafoe is your thing, this is the best he's ever looked. I'll just put it that way. The Loveless.
Good sell. Good sell on that. I'm definitely curious about this one. I almost blind bought it, but I didn't. I may wait for a sale, but... You know, I love Kathryn Bigelow. I think she hasn't made a film that I haven't liked, you know, on some level. So I've always wanted to see this one. It's been a blind spot for me for a long time. So I was psyched that they were putting it out. I'm definitely going to get it at some point. You sold me based on, you know, the way you seem to have felt about the movie, which was the thing I was most concerned about. Not that I thought she'd do a bad movie, but... Yeah, it sounds intriguing.
No, I mean, you love like The Wanderers. Like, it's not it's not that far fetched from something like that.
That's great.
You know,
that's great. No, that's it. You sold me 100%. Well, I've got my own gang action happening, and I'm gonna double down on James Spader for my next one, which is Tough Turf from 1985. Also,
meet Morgan Hiller.
First day in a new school. You ready for it?
I always.
He's got an attitude.
No bike riding on camp.
Well, I was just sort of hoping I could take a quick ride through history.
You mind taking those off?
I'd like to see who I'm talking to.
They've got a problem.
Let go of me!
Not until you tell me what your name is.
He lives in two worlds.
I'm sure Patty and Al will vouch for us.
Always behind enemy lines.
You are not now, nor were you ever members of this club.
Just when I thought we were going to be good friends.
Tough Turf.
They took your car.
I don't own a car, man.
He's a loner on a roll. An outsider on the edge. Caught between a dangerous loser.
Did you give his bike back?
And a girl they both love.
She belongs to Nick.
Come on, Jimmy. Lincoln freed the slaves.
Yeah, I thought you were going to such a nice, respectable guy.
I could just ice you right now.
They can't shut him down.
Body heat on contact.
And they can't cool him off.
Oh. You!
I figure if I wait long enough, maybe I can...
Get lucky?
Tough Turf.
So this one's from Kino... And I think it's a really interesting movie because it's not necessarily a, you know, photo negative version of the New Kids in terms of the Spader character, but it is an interesting twist on that movie in terms of Spader. I mean, for all intents and purposes, plays the good guy in this movie. He plays a, you know, a rich kid who, I don't know if he's rich actually. No, he's not actually. His dad drives a cab. Now I remember that's something they make a point to say that he's not rich. And so he moves into this new area, this new school. And, you know, much like the New Kids, you know, he runs afoul of the local gang. This is more urban. I think it's L.A. based. Oh, now I'm going to fuck that up. I'm not exactly sure if it's L.A. or not. Now that I remember it. But anyway, it's more urban and there it's more of a gang thing. There's a great opening sequence that there's a commentary on the disc from the director Fritz Kirsch. And he was talking about how he was influenced by things like A Clockwork Orange and Monty Walsh, and that the opening of the movie is actually his own nod to Once Upon a Time in the West, which if you watch it, you might be able to see that, but it's not yeah, it's a different thing. It's a great opening. It's just like, basically the gang has some dudes in it, and also Kim Richards, who I love and who is in like a bunch of Disney movies and stuff like that. And she's in Assault on Precinct 13, famously gets killed in that movie. But she's sort of like the, you know, desired female in the film. And she's like trying to pick up on some dude who they're going to like, I think they're going to roll him and take his money. But then Spader comes in and like messes everything up. Like he zips by on his bike and like, you know, knocks one dude over. He grabs a beer from one of the other ones and like sprays the beer on some other dudes. And like they end up spray painting each other or something. It's just this whole stupid farce. And that's the inciting incident that pisses off the gang and gets him on their shit list. But then, of course, he also falls for Kim Richards, so that's a whole thing, you know. But it's really, it's like, I don't know, I think I undervalued it the last time I watched it, and I didn't enjoy it as much as I did this time, which I liked it way better. I used to think it comes out of the gate strong with that scene and then sort of faltered a bit. But this time I realized that it actually has a ton of fun scenes throughout, and including not one but two 80s dance club scenes. It is an LA movie. I do have that in my notes. I'm sorry. So there's that. But the 80s club scenes are great. The high school scenes are great. It has this like Karate Kid meets like Class of 1984 kind of vibe. I think that is a way to encapsulate it, you know, in terms of like the bullies and stuff like that. James Spader's dad is played by this actor named Matt Clark. And Matt Clark, he drives a cab, like I said, and he is this character actor who you've seen in like hundreds of movies. Like we're talking like, you know, not Dick Miller numbers, but like maybe half Dick Miller numbers. Like you see this guy, you'll be like, oh, I've seen that dude. And for whatever reason, he doesn't always get a speaking role. And in this case, he plays like a slightly more pivotal role in that he's Spader's dad. So I like that because I like Matt Clark and he never really gets a shot. So I don't know. I do think, though, it is a perfect double bill with the new kids for the Spader connection, but also because of like the kind of reverse world thing where he's suddenly on the other side of, you know, running afoul, if you will. And I don't know. I like both movies a lot. And I was surprised how much I enjoyed the director commentary on this disc, which is new to this Blu-ray. I don't think that was on the you know what? Now I could be wrong. I don't think it was on the Anchor Bay DVD, but it might have been. But anyway, it's still great to have it ported over regardless. And, the movie looks good and it's a lot of fun. It's just an 80s gem, you know, and it gets pretty bonkers in the very last scene. It gets kind of like Death Wish almost.
Oh, wow.
without giving anything away. So that's a great climax, just like the New Kids has a great climax. So on that level, they pair well. So that's Tough Turf from 1985 from Kino.
Cool. Yeah, I gotta pick. Those are both blind spots, Tough Turf and the New Kids, and I've been meaning to pick them up, so I'm glad they're available now. And I also see the Tough Turf soundtrack on vinyl pretty regularly, and I because I've never seen the movie, I'm like, oh, do I need this? Do I want this? I mean, it's got good songs. Yeah, I have a feeling it's right up my alley.
It's pretty good. I was gonna say the soundtrack I'm a fan of. I mean, it's very 80s, 100%, but I think it's something you would dig. It's one I've actually looked at trying to buy myself, so I may have to keep a lookout. But
all right.
What's next, sir?
Cool. So this is my fifth pick, and I do have a runner-up this month. It was tough. I was going back and forth, but no, I just had so much fun with this movie that I wanted to give it a little more love. I am talking about Captain Marvel, and this is the 3D version that I got off of Amazon UK.
Excuse me, miss. Why are you dressed for laser tag?
Oh, boy. You guys don't have any clue, do you?
I'm here to stop the shapeshifters that are infiltrating your planet.
That's what I'm talking about.
Captain Marvel.
You know you're glowing, right?
Rated PG-13.
Okay.
So, I mean, what can I say? Marvel movies at this point are, for the most part, you know exactly what you're getting. It's top-notch entertainment. They have this is a well-oiled machine. The fun thing about this one, this came out in between the two Avengers movies, Infinity War and now Endgame. They kind of gave you a little snippet of, the Captain Marvel character in the post-credit scene of Infinity War. And just when you're like, oh, who is this person? What's with this pager? I don't get it. This is the first Marvel story told in the 90s. And hell, I freaking love the 90s. I grew up in it. I picked a Soundgarden Blu-ray this month. So, I mean, this is it's pretty on brand for me. Again, I don't know why. I mean, there's a 4K release of it here. However, this is absolutely an all-region 3D version of it that you can get from the UK, and it looks great in 3D. I mean, basically all these movies, they've kind of perfected it, especially with all the space stuff, and she tends to light up a lot when she uses her powers, so she just looks fantastic. But if you need a quick refresher, basically it starts out with she's part of this kind of this like elites, like Kree. They're called the Kree, but they're basically a space force, if you will, that kind of takes out threats. In particular, there is another group called the Skrulls that are supposedly causing havoc in space, and so they're kind of like on the trail of the Skrulls. An incident happens where some of her memories are triggered because she has no memory of her life before being this character Vers. They call her Vers. And so something happens. She's drawn back to Earth and realizes that that's where she's from. She was plucked out of there 6 years ago when she got her powers and is trying to piece together exactly who she is and how she fits into this whole story. And to help her along is Mr. Samuel Jackson, who plays Nick Fury in these movies. And he's great because I think Samuel Jackson can read the phone book and I'd be entertained. He's always great in his movies. I think this could be the most Samuel Jackson we've gotten in a Marvel movie. And he's really funny. He's really charming. He's done a bunch of movies with Brie Larson now. I know they're in the Kong Skull Island movie together. And I think there's something else in between. So they have great chemistry. And it's just a really fun, action-packed movie that finally puts a female superhero front and center. And it's just a blast. I really, really love it. And even the post-credit scenes are pretty fun as well. And a great twist about the villains, which it's interesting that the last several Marvel movies have really tapped into doing things with their villains to make them relatable or understand where they're coming from, where it's not just like an evil plot to take over the world, you know, as can be cliched from comic books. So I really love this. It's great. It's a perfect fit. And I'm really looking forward at some point, my fiance and I are going to do a deep dive and go back to the beginning and watch them all chronologically, including all the ones I have in 3D, which will be a blast. So Captain Marvel in 3D, excellent release.
Nice. Yeah, no, I'm a fan. I've only seen it once. Trying to get around to it another time, but I definitely enjoyed it. Good stuff. So good pick. That's an epic project you guys are taking on there.
But it'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be great. No, I love that kind of stuff, honestly. You know, my son on his own just started watching. He's seen a bunch of the Tarantino films, but, you know, we took him to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and he on his own was like, you know, I'm watching Inglourious Basterds again, or I'm watching, and he's just going to go through them all himself. And I'm just like, it's nice to do those projects with other people, but I think it's just as fun to take on a project yourself and kind of be like, I'm going to do this. This is going to be my thing, you know? So I think that's great. All right. So as I mentioned at the top, I have a couple labels that I don't mention a lot on the show. My next pick is from 101 Films, which is a UK based company. And I was trying to think about how to quantify them in the States. And I would say they are kind of like somewhere between Kino and Olive Films, not only because they put out some of the titles of both of those labels, but more like Olive Films, a lot of their stuff doesn't have extras, which is unfortunate, but they do put out some interesting titles. So like they have the FX Complete Illusion, you know, FX 1 and 2 together, and Into the Night, and Stone Cold, and Truck Turner, and they have one that I recommend definitely people get, and I should have brought up on the show at some point, is they have Toy Soldiers.
Oh, with I love Sean that movie. Astin. Yeah,
it's great. And it's a very, for those who don't know, it's a very widescreen movie, and I feel like I've seen it crop to 185 on maybe streaming. I'm not sure. Maybe I could be wrong about that. But anyway, there's no Blu-ray in the States, and this one is all region, if I recall. But what one thing that about this, my pick is, I should mention before I go into that, they also have a sub-label called 101 Films Black Label, which is kind of like the Olive Films Signature Collection. Mm-hmm. And so they have titles like The Grifters and Existenz and Roller Coaster and Trespass and Howard the Duck.
Wow.
And things like that, where they tend to add, those ones tend to have features, but not all of them have features. No, actually, I think they do now that I think of it. Oh, shit. I got to get this damn Howard the Duck Blu-ray. Damn it. I didn't even realize I needed that. But speaking of wacky comedies, my pick is Amazon Women on the Moon.
Oh. Universal, the studio that brought you such classic motion pictures as All Quiet on the Western Front, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, and Out of Africa, is proud to present
Amazon Women on the Moon.
Featuring Steve Guttenberg, Rosanna Arquette, Lou Jacoby.
Where am I?
Pretty scary, huh?
Ooh.
Ed Begley Jr., B.B. King.
Did you know that every 7 minutes a black person is born in this country without soul?
Tiger yellow ribbon round the old tree.
Russ Meyer, Ralph Bellamy, Monique Gabrielle.
I bet I know what you want.
Griffin Dunn, Steve Forrest, Sybil Danning.
Oh, Steve, save yourself.
Henry Silva, Steve Allen, Kelly Preston, Carrie Fisher, and Arsenio Hall. Amazon Women on the Moon.
I've seen enough, Doctor.
I know you have, but have you?
Amazon Women on the Moon.
The new film from directors Joe Dante, Carl Gottlieb, Peter Horton, John Landis, and Robert Weiss.
This movie from 1987 is really something in terms of the cast and in terms of the different directors involved, because you have John Landis, Joe Dante, Carl Gottlieb, Peter Horton from 30 something actually directs one of them, a guy named Robert K. Weiss. But the gist of it is basically that it's a madcap anthology of different sketches in shorts centered around this film within the film called Amazon Women on the Moon. So you're kind of watching kind of like a TV broadcast where, you know, you have these little shorts or commercials or things, and then they go into, you know, the movie Amazon Women on the Moon that, you know, isn't a real movie, but it is for the purposes of this film. And they'll show a clip, a scene from that movie, then they'll come out of it and they'll go into some other sketch. I mean, it's very like Kentucky Fried Movie, you know, anthology comedy, but I think it's pretty great. I mean, there's just some really great bits in here, and including one of my favorite Joe Dante things of all time, which is this segment called Bullshit or Not with Henry Silva. And it's done very much like a, you know, Unsolved Mysteries kind of thing with Henry Silva. I mean, right away, you should just be like, Henry Silva hosting something like that? That sounds amazing. And to hear Henry Silva just say bullshit or not is really funny.
Extraterrestrials. Strange phenomena, missing persons, lost continents, myths, and monsters.
We examine these mysteries to determine, are they bullshit or not?
But they'll do things like the opening one is like this reenactment of a theory that they're proposing, which is that Jack the Ripper was actually the Loch Ness Monster. So they have this ridiculous scene where this hooker gets approached by the Loch Ness Monster in like a coat and jacket. And anyway, that's just one segment.
Yeah.
But there's lots of really weird, funny segments in this movie, and I really think it holds up. I mean, the cast is insane. It's like Michelle Pfeiffer, Peter Horton, Griffin Dunn, Sybil Danning, Forry Ackerman, Rosanna Arquette, Ed Begley Jr., Kelly Preston, Russ Meyer plays a video store clerk in it. Mark McClure, David Alan Greer, Joey Pants, Andrew Dice Clay, Howard Hessman, Jenny Agutter, Robert Picardo. It's insane. It's really like all the stock company players from all these directors, like converging on one film. So you just have tons of great bits. You know, like there's a really funny bit where I forget who directed this one, but Rosanna Arquette is going on a date with Steve Guttenberg. And she's like, let me just have your driver's license for a second. And she slides his license. And it basically is this, there's this service that like, it's like Yelp sort of, but obviously well before the internet, where everybody that he's ever dated that had some bad thing to say about something he did, like comes up on this report. And she starts just going down the list.
And Jerry, I could never get serious about someone who's selfish in bed.
Who is selfish in bed?
Well, how would you describe a man who satisfies his own needs and rolls over and goes to sleep?
I never did that in my life.
11 times. You want names and dates?
No, no, I do not. Look, hey, hold. Anyway, that is just a small fraction of the hundreds of times I've been intimate with women.
We're exaggerating a little, aren't we, Jerry? I mean, the record only shows 21 sexual intimacies.
Look, look, well, hey, well, this doesn't jive with my figures, okay, sweetie?
Jerry, the statistics don't paint the picture of a mature man. 12 times you ignored your date at a party to flirt with a more attractive woman. 169 times you feigned interest when a woman was talking about her career. And 17 occasions you lied to women telling them you were really into sushi and Meryl Streep movies. Make that 18 times.
It's amazing. It's so funny. So anyway, wow. Very funny anthology comedy. This is supposed to be a Region B locked disc, but it's not.
Oh.
It actually plays on my Region A player fine. So I would say if you're interested in this movie, you can pick it up. I would assume that the Region B locked look is probably because maybe a Shout Factory or somebody is working on it. It seems like a perfect Shout Factory select kind of title. But they haven't put it out yet. And this one actually is one of the rare 101 films releases that does have extras. It has We're Gonna Need Bigger Skits, an interview with Carl Gottlieb, Cinematographer on the Moon, an interview with the DP Daniel Pearl, audio commentary with Mondo Digital's Nathaniel Thompson, who is great, and Kino Lorber uses him a lot. And then it's got a nice booklet with interviews with Ira Newborn, the composer, and with Sybil Danning. So it's actually a pretty nice little special edition from 101 Films, and one that I got. Definitely keep an eye on their website because they do sales fairly regularly, and they'll drop their releases to like £6, which, you know, is less than $10. And when you put them all together, even with shipping, I think I ended up paying right around $10 a piece for these, which is not bad even for bare bones. Like I just bought a bunch through their sale they just had, and I was getting things like Alien Nation, and they have their own release of Nightmares, the TV movie anthology, which I think had some different extras than the Scream one.
Factory one, yeah.
Yeah, and then I got like Monkey Bone, and I got Plunkett and McLean, and you know, they've got a lot of varied stuff. So they're definitely a company that I'd like to bring up more on the show, and I probably will, but this is the big one. This is the one where I'm like, I can't believe this isn't on Blu-ray in the States, and this is a nice version of it.
Yeah.
So Amazon Women on the Moon, a cult classic, definitely worth your time, from 101 Films.
Very cool. So my runner-ups this week. So basically the way I work it is that my five picks are actual recommendations. These are my five recommendations for the month. And this one, it's two films from Kino Lorber, so I'm going to give them a little love. I am a huge fan of Alfred Hitchcock. I've been trying to get as much of his stuff as possible on Blu-ray. And so my runner-ups are actually two movies that they just put out. Blackmail.
I couldn't look back in the face after what happened last night. And under our very noses.
Mind you, identifying myself is altogether the police's fault. What I mean is they have to wink at some things. I mean, it's one thing to buy chocolates out of ours, but it's quite another to stick a knife into a gentleman. I must say I feel the same way about that, too. A good, clean, honest whack over the head with a brick is one thing. There's something British about that. But knives. No, knives is not right. I must say that's what I think and that's what I feel. Whatever the provocation, I could never use a knife. Now, mind you, a knife is a difficult thing to handle. I mean, any knife. I mean, if you use a pen knife, a knife.
Alice, cut us a bit of bread, will you?
A knife. A knife is the same thing. Be careful of a knife. You come up against a knife.
I mean, in Chelsea, you mustn't use a knife!
Yeah, you ought to have been more careful. Might have cut somebody with that.
From 1929 and Murder! Exclamation point from 1930. And these are both very early Alfred Hitchcock movies. And the reason they're not my picks, but I did want to mention them, is I can't really recommend this to the average movie fan. Like, if you're just looking for a fun thriller or whatever, these are definitely, because they're early Hitchcock movies, they're a little on the slow side. Basically, these are for diehard Hitchcock fans like myself that want to just see everything he's ever done, or cinephiles that just have that urge to collect everything. But if you want to get into Hitchcock, I would more recommend basically anything that Criterion has put out from his filmography, anything from the last, you know, whatever, 10 years of his career, which they all have great individual releases, everything from Strangers on a Train to Vertigo to Psycho, of course, The Birds, Frenzy, which we talked about on the show. So if you're going to go for Hitchcock, go for one of those. But otherwise, these are really fascinating, and I still think there's always at least one element or one thing in every Hitchcock movie that I find educational, interesting, or like, wow, whether it's a shot, whether it's a plot point or something an actor does, there's always something in them. In Blackmail in particular, there's a really great shot where basically you see characters going up the stairs, but you're like almost like the, you're on the other side of the stairs. So you feel like you're the wall of the building following them up three flights. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I've never seen that before. And so anyway, so Blackmail's pretty straightforward. A detective is dating a girl. She kind of ends up leaving him for another guy. The guy that she goes and hangs out with tries to assault her, and so she kills him in self-defense. He and now the detective finds out that it was her, tries to protect her, and kind of this no-good criminal thug sees overhears them and sees them leaving the scene of the crime and starts blackmailing them, hence the title. What's interesting about this one is it is Hitchcock's first sound film, meaning it's before, obviously everything before this was silent pictures where they did music to it. It's interesting because it's, you could sense Hitchcock's transition, because the first 10 minutes or so are just music, right? And then about at the 10-minute mark, you start hearing the characters talk. And so this is the moment that probably audiences at the time are like, oh my God, wow, like we could hear their voices. And so he doesn't like fully jump into the quote-unquote talkies, as they call them. It's like a nice transition period from silent film to this. But it actually does include the silent version of Blackmail. And it's got an audio commentary from Tim Lucas, who is a film historian and does a lot of these discs. I think that's really fascinating. And one of the other things I don't really understand is it comes with a second disc that says 1.20-1 version. So I don't know if it's a slightly different framing or what. I'm not really, there's no reviews of this online as of yet. So I was trying to figure out like, oh, I wonder what the story is with this second disc version. And anyways, and then Murder is also a similar thing. This is Hitchcock's third sound film in the crime genre. And it was adapted from a play. Basically it's a woman who's convicted of a murder of another actress in her camp. Basically it almost becomes partly a courtroom drama sort of deal. Again, it's kind of slow, but still interesting for what it is in the time period. And it even includes, also directed by Hitchcock, a 1931 German version of it called Mary. So, again, not the best starting point if you're getting into Hitchcock, but for completists, I think it's great that they've made these available, and they include things like the silent film version, an alternate German version. It's kind of crazy that we finally have all this material. And I think we've got just about all of his key films on Blu-ray. There's still a few of the really early ones missing, including Stage Fright from 1950, but we're almost there, and it's kind of a beautiful thing that we've got just about every Hitchcock movie on Blu-ray. So Blackmail and Murder from Kino Lorber.
That's super cool, man. I was hoping you'd bring those up. I did get pitched maybe to do an episode on those two, which I may still do at some point. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's definitely not a good entry point for sure. I do remember that Blackmail definitely, and I think Murder too, had Criterion Laserdisc releases back in the day. So I used to have the Criterion commentary for Blackmail. I wonder if I could dig that up somewhere.
Policemen and detectives in Hitchcock films were often portrayed as obnoxious characters. Hitchcock always tried to ridicule them. Even though it is not the case here, this arrest sequence is a reflection of the fear Hitchcock admittedly had of policemen. He was supposedly well-behaved as a child, and was even called by his father a little lamb without a spot. However, when he was 5 or 6 years old, in punishment for some minor fault, his father sent Hitchcock to the police station with a note. The policeman on duty read it and locked young Alfred in a cell for 5 minutes, saying, "This is what we do to naughty little boys." This incident certainly had an influence on Hitchcock, who never drove a car for fear of being arrested. Blackmail was the first British sound picture. When the picture was ready for final editing, John Maxwell, the producer of the film, set up a temporary soundstage studio with RCA material imported from the United States. It was then very difficult and costly to add post-dubbing, and Hitchcock had to reshoot parts of the film with live music and off-stage sound effects. During the transition between silent and sound, films were advertised as part-sound films. They had been shot silent, but only the last reel had been reshot with sound. Hitchcock had suspected during the production of Blackmail that the producers would ultimately want, in the end, an all-sound picture. Therefore, while shooting the silent version of Blackmail, he was thinking sound in preparation for the possibility of reshooting later.
But obviously, it's nice to have these new commentaries. I think Tim Lucas is one of the great commentator people, you know, and historians in terms of this stuff. And I've mentioned before that I just love that Kino is putting him to work on, you know, he wrote a book about Mario Bava, so he knows that stuff well. But I love that they're putting him on, you know, other movies like, you know, the Leone Westerns and then Hitchcock movies like this. And, you know, he's always very thorough, and he always gives me a lot of information about actors and just everything. Like, he's just one of the best. Yeah. So if you have a commentary from him on your disc, you've got something special right there. So that's good stuff.
Yeah.
So my last pick is from another label I haven't mentioned very much. I think I've only mentioned them once before, and that is Disney Movie Club, which I am a member of. And for those that don't know, Disney Movie Club is along the lines of Columbia Record and Tape Club from back in the 80s and 90s. They hook you with like a deal at the beginning. You get stuff really cheap, but then you have to fulfill your obligations, which is buying 5 films at full price. And people will be like, "Well, is it worth it?" And my answer is yes, I do think it's worth it.
Yeah.
I think between the exclusives that you can only get, I mean, you can try and scalp these on eBay, but the prices tend to be pretty high.
Yeah.
And
do they limit how many you can get, by the way?
No, they do not.
All right. Well, then I have a wish list for you.
Yeah, I'll snag you some stuff.
I need Freaky Friday and Black Hole, man. I need it.
Yeah. Wait, Black Hole? I don't know if Black Hole's out yet, but
it's
I think it's coming.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely want that.
By the time this airs,
it probably will be out. Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing I'll say about it. I said this on a previous episode. The transfers are not going to blow your mind, but they're definitely a step above DVD. What I'm saying by not blow your mind is that it's clear that they haven't taken any time or resources to restore them.
Yeah, these are existing HD masters. Probably.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're getting. So the colors tend to be good, but maybe just slightly muted in a way that you're like, oh, it could be shimmering, but it's not that, but it looks good, right? So, I mean, I've gotten so much shit from them, from like Swiss Family Robinson and just recently 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea to, like you said, Freaky Friday, Journey of Natty Gann. Let's see here. I mean, I've got a ridiculous amount, like Strongest Man in the World, Computer War Tennis Shoes, Escape and Return to Witch Mountain, Herbie, you know, all the Herbie movies. I think they put all of them out. I could be wrong about that. I got a bunch of them. I got The Love Bug, Herbie Rides Again, Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo, Herbie Goes Bananas. Anyway, I like Disney Movie Club. I do recommend it. And you can sign up, and then as soon as you fulfilled your obligations, quit and then sign up again. And they don't seem to penalize you for that. And the other thing that's nice about the exclusives is that they often fall under like these half price deals that they'll do just about every month. So you still have to buy a title at full price, but then you can get a whole bunch of more titles at like half price. And so these retail, the exclusives that I just mentioned, they retail at about $24.95. So they're about $12 with the half off. And sometimes they'll also add in free shipping. So, you know, if you do it right, you can, you know, definitely get a whole bunch of stuff and end up not spending a ton, you know, kind of evening things out. And, you know, you could, if you were so inclined, maybe buy a couple extras of some copies and sell those on eBay. Yeah. I'm not saying I've done that necessarily, but, you know, that's something you could do to help offset your costs. But yeah, Rob, send me your list. I'm happy to help set you up. But getting to my title, which I've taken a long
time.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
it's my own fault. This is A Goofy Movie from 1995.
Oh. Going somewhere, Pop?
Sure are. It's a vacation with me and my best buddy,
Donald Duck.
No, silly. With you. It's Goofy.
Give me a big smack.
Stop goofing around.
In an outrageous full-length animated feature.
We'll spend some real quality time together.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Walt Disney Pictures presents...
Come on, this is going to be fun.
The story of a father who couldn't be closer.
That's the spirit, Maxie.
God, this is embarrassing.
To driving his son crazy.
This is pathetic.
Now, they're getting a crash course in becoming best friends.
It's Bigfoot!
Could you back up a bit, Mr. Foot? You're out of focus.
This spring, one of Disney's favorite classic characters lands at theaters. In the most hilarious...
It's the Leaning Tower of Cheesa.
And hippest... animated musical comedy ever.
A little smoke, kid.
Which is like surprisingly a huge cult item. Like, I did not know this, but when I mentioned that this was even coming out, I rarely have gotten the response that I got in terms of a Disney Movie Club release. People were just losing their minds. They're just like, oh, I love that movie. And clearly it was just a movie that was, you know, one of the later VHS, you know, Disney releases that came out in 95, 96. And a lot of people, you know, picked it up and bought. I think it was a sell-through movie to start. I could be wrong about that, but I think it might be one that came out as a sell-through tape to begin with. And so I think a lot of people bought it and watched it over and over again and loved it. And to be honest, it is better than it has any right to be. And it goes deeper into some sadder places than I would expect a 2D animated film that also stars Pauly Shore to go to. You know, it's just, it's a really touching story. It's just like Goofy and his son are sort of estranged, and, you know, he embarrasses the kid a lot, and they go on a family vacation, and the two of them, and things get a little wacky, as they always do with Goofy. But it's got some fun little bits, like, you know, there's a music artist that is kind of like MC Hammer meets Michael Jackson. That is the thing that this kid is really into, and that's a really funny thing in and of itself. But there's a coming of age aspect to it, a sweetness to it of the relationship between Goofy and his son, and it's just a really solid family movie. Like, I was very impressed with it. And having seen a lot of, you know, boring kids movies in the past decade, I always appreciate a good one. And I was happy to discover this even as late as I have, you know. So definitely worth it. They also released an Extremely Goofy Movie, the follow-up, which I haven't watched yet, but I bought. But yeah, Goofy Movie is definitely worth a pickup and good for the family viewing if you haven't seen it. It's well worth getting. But anyway, that is everything from me. I think we're done, right?
Wow, no, that is a eclectic two stacks worth of fine cinema, if you ask me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what we do here, man. That's what we do. And that's what people like this show so much for. So thank you, Rob, for curating another wonderful stack. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Zo. It was always a pleasure.
Yeah, man. This is great. This is great. We will be back in a month's time with new stacks, very carefully curated. I know people may think that there's, you know, maybe some haphazardness to this stuff, but I think you and I both take time putting this stuff together.
I mean, I specifically pick things that I'm excited to talk to you about. I mean,
nice.
I have my horror show already where I talk about that stuff. But these are the things, even when I'm watching them, I'm like, oh, you know what? I got to check if Brian owns this yet. So
I love it. Well, and I'm trying to do the same from my end. I mean, there's not too much that I can throw at you that you haven't heard of, but
me pretty regularly. Trust me.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
I'm learning.
It's a lot of fun. And I always enjoy these conversations and I feel like, you know, the way that we curate these is always interesting and it's always a great mix of stuff. So
yeah.
I appreciate the time that you take to put your stacks together. I know people might think, like I said, that it's not something that's as thought out as it actually is between the two of us. And I know that for a fact that it really is thought out, which is great.
Well, you know what? I want to hear more from people. Let us know which movies from our stacks you've checked out and liked. I mean, I kind of want to hear if any of my recommendations are making a dent out there. So
absolutely. Yeah. Please. If anything that we've talked about on any of these new arrivals episodes strikes your fancy or you blind buy it and like it,
let us know.
You know, anything like that, please, you know, tweet at us, you know, Just the Disc Pod, Icons Rob G, Bob Freelander. Just let us know. We'd love to talk about it. And we love to hear from people that listen to the show and enjoy these episodes because they're a lot of fun for us. So anyway, everybody have a lovely and Blu-ray filled week. And we will talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.